This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. This is Case Closed with another hour of old-time radio crime. We'll begin with The New Adventures of Nero Wolfe and The Calculated Risk, his episode from January 19, 1951. After that, it's Walk Softly, Peter Troy, and The Lady Who Loved Larceny, his episode from December 24, 1963.
Ladies and gentlemen, the ringing of that phone bell means mystery, adventure.
Nero Wolfe's office, Archie Goodwin speaking. Mr. Wolfe? Yeah, he's right here. Who's this?
Archie, hang up. Don't ask questions.
You have a what?
Archie, it's past your bedtime.
Well, I'm afraid, Mr. Wolfe, it's past his bedtime.
Your bedtime.
It's a client, boss.
That's what I was afraid of. Foolish.
Hello? Hello?
Well, why do you look so bewildered?
He's coming right over. He says he's got a date. With murder.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the detective genius who rates the knife and fork the greatest tools ever invented by man. The ponderous, brilliant, and unpredictable Nero Wolfe. Created by Rex Stout and brought to you in a new series of adventures over this NBC network in the person of Mr. Sidney Greenstreet.
Tonight's story, The Case of the Calculated Risk, was as strange and baffling as any Nero Wolfe had to deal with. It started late one night when a big-shouldered man sporting a reddish beard and billing himself as Dave Caffrey pushed his way in, walked up to Nero Wolfe's desk, and rocked him with this opener.
Tomorrow morning, Mr. Wolfe, I'm going to kill a man.
I beg your pardon, sir?
I'm going to kill a man with these two hands.
I've been told strange things across this desk, Mr. Caffrey. This is the first time a murderer has confided his intention to me in advance. This man you speak of...
I'm not telling you his name. I'm not telling you where I'm going to meet him. The session tomorrow is going to be private and personal. But if anything happens to me between now and then, I want you to take over.
Mr. Caffrey, do you seriously think I could assist you in a matter of private vengeance?
That's not what I'm asking. This guy deserves to die. I plan to kill him with these two hands, me, myself. But if I slip up, if he gets me first, I want you to see that justice is done.
And I assure you, sir...
I told you this guy deserves to die. Let me tell you why. Years ago down south, there were three men in business together, partners. Me and two others.
Your notebook, Archie, if Mr. Caffrey doesn't mind.
You're wasting your time, Wolfe. The names I'll use will be phony. I won't give you anything you can check back on.
We'll take a chance, sir. Please proceed.
It happened in a town about 40 miles from the place where we had our business. We'd gone there to collect some money, the three of us. Carl, Mitch, and me. Dave Caffrey. But all we collected was bad news. So bad that Carl hadn't even given our right names at the hotel. Said he was scared some of our creditors had come hitting up on us for what we owed. Three of us had had some drinks, and we'd been pacing around for nearly an hour. I can still remember the way Mitch stood and looked at me. And then up at Carl, when Carl suddenly pulled to a stop and came out with this idea of his.
So, Dave... You've got 6,000 cash on hand. You counted it, Mitch.
Well, didn't we make it 6,240, Carl?
Whichever. We've got this 6,000 out, plus some slow accounts receivable against debts of 38,000. With three of us trying to live from the business, we haven't got a chance.
Well, we ain't got much of a one, Carl, but...
It's hopeless, Dave. With two partners, though...
Two partners? You reckon on pulling out, Carl?
I say we cut cards for it, Mitch. Low man drops out.
Break up the partnership? After sticking together all these
years? Wait a minute, Dave, wait a minute. Maybe Carl's right. Maybe this could work. Carl, you mean the low man drops out clean? Right now?
Right now, Mitch. Other two to take over assets and debts and see if they can get this thing back in the black.
Okay, Carl. Get the cards out.
Dave?
Well, that's what you guys want.
Okay, then. Here's a new deck. Shuffle them, Mitch.
All shuffled.
Cut them, Dave. Go ahead, Mitch. You get first pick. Spread them if you like.
Here goes.
6. Your turn, Dave.
Okay. 9 of clubs.
Lucky guy, Dave. That puts you in whatever Carl pulls.
I'll pull it fast. There she is.
Denise.
Sorry, Mitch. That leaves you elected.
Well, Mitch, I'm sorry, too. I guess we all had a fair whack at it, but...
Hey, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Let me see that ace again, Carl.
Easy, Mitch. I said I was sorry,
look,
but...
Dave.
Yeah, what is it, Mitch?
All the aces are marked. Carl, I'm going to cram this dick right down your crooked throat.
Oh, look out, Mitch. He's got a knife.
Sure.
Oh. Carl, you...
All right. I've cut him for keeps. What do we do now?
What do we do? Look, Carl, I didn't mark those cards. I didn't kill Mitch. And what's more...
Shut up, Dave. We're both in and out now. Come on. Let's get out of here.
Now what, Carl?
Look, Dave, this is where we split up. Two men together, easy to trace. You head one way, I go the other.
Yeah, but the dough, I got no money.
Here, I'll split up the 6,000. This is your head. Here, stick the envelope in your pocket. Now, grab that tray. Get set. I'll catch the next one going the other way. Get going, Dave!
And that's how it was, Mr. Wolf. It all happened so fast that I...
This man you call Carl, he would seem to be one of the world's choice creatures, Mr. Geoffrey.
When I thought to look in that envelope he gave me, I found $40 and a few folds of wrapping paper in it. I was mad enough to... Well, I got off the freight and intended to go back, but... Then I picked up a paper.
And read all about the murder of your friend Mitch with the statement that Carl had accused you of the crime. And that the police believed him in view of your escape.
That's it.
Classical, but not at all original.
Well, I was young then and stupid. And I'd had those drinks to start with.
And you spent the intervening years hunting down the man Carl, am I correct?
Yeah. I tramped the country from east to west, from north to south. Tramped it for years, searching for him. And yesterday, I located him. He's a big wheel these days up on that 37th floor of his. But tomorrow, when I get...
Yes, Mr. Caffrey, the 37th floor of...
Never mind what building.
Now, wait a minute, Caffrey. If you expect Mr. Wolf to help you...
I don't want him to help me. I'll help myself. But if I slip up, I know Wolf's reputation well enough to know that he'll never rest till this rotten, chiseling murderer is sitting in the chair. That's why I've come here. Just to provide a backstop in case my dear friend of long ago manages to get the best of me.
How will we know?
You see this envelope? Read what it says.
Nero Wolf, 601 West 35th Street, New York. Delivered to him in case of my death.
That's right. And this envelope was $500. Nearly all I've got in the world. Along with it, the full details on that knife. Real names, dates. The proof you'll need in case I don't finish it up.
Go on.
Tonight, Mr. Wolf, I'm going to give this envelope to the manager of the hotel where I'm stopping. I'm calling on, well, Carl. Tomorrow at noon, right after his secretary goes to lunch. If I'm not back in my hotel at 1 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, the hotel manager will deliver this envelope to you. Is that clear?
Perfectly. But you don't think I'm going to allow you to go through with this wire plan, do you?
You can't stop me. And don't have Goodwin follow me. I'd lose him in 2 blocks. Good night.
Shall I try to tail him, boss?
It's no use, Archie. Get Inspector Kramer on the phone at once. I want the police to help us head off this murder. Nero Wolf speaking.
It's Archie. I'm calling from the morgue.
And?
They found Caffrey's body in a subway washroom, mugged and stabbed. Wallet gone, pockets cleaned out, no envelope.
And just 2 hours ago, he was here. No envelope, eh?
Gone.
Witnesses?
None so far. Homicide's calling it straight mugging and robbery.
As it well might look, except for...
Except for a guy named Carl. How much do I tell Kramer?
All of it. Ask the inspector to start queries throughout the South on the original killing.
The original killing? Look...
It's our best chance of getting a description of the man called Carl. The original killing and the partnership. Starting from, say, 8 years ago and working back to the middle 20s. Tell him to concentrate on towns on railway lines.
Putting out pictures of Caffrey and...
Pictures and dentistry. Fingerprints to Washington. Kramer will know.
And if I come across a haystack, do I keep my eye out for needles?
We're going to find Carl, Archie. We're going to find him if it takes him now till doomsday.
Mr. Wolf, let's face it, we're licked.
Licked, Archie?
3 days now. We found Caffrey's hotel here in New York. No traceable phone calls. Not a witness has turned up on that subway washroom party. And Kramer says he's getting nowhere with those answers from the Southland.
The original story is bound to come slowly, Archie. We are asking a check on the unsolved killings of a dozen states over a 20-year period.
And what now?
You start trudging, Archie.
Trudging?
Through office buildings, through 37th floors of many office buildings. You keep trudging till we find him.
Oh, now, wait a minute, Mr. Wolf. This is a big city, remember? I might have to go through hundreds of buildings.
This morning, Archie, the Municipal Reference Library informed me that there are exactly 34 buildings of 37 floors or higher in Manhattan. Now, when you rule out the United Nations building, hotels,
okay,
and...
Okay, okay. Maybe not so many 37th floors, but lots of offices per floor. Maybe 40 or 50. Call it 30 times 40, and you've still got 1,200 to start with. And you don't know what kind of business, you don't know what Carl's real name is, you don't even know what he looks like. There could be 4,000 men like him.
4,000 affluent men, Archie?
Yeah, well, all right. Caffrey said he was in the chips, though. You know, for a guy who'd been bumming around, that could mean anything from 10 grand a year up. Say, wait a minute, that cuts your field to 1,000.
1,000 tall men?
Tall? I've been over those notes. Caffrey didn't say he was tall.
As plainly as you could ask. Caffrey was almost your height, but he said Mitch stood and looked at me. And then he looked up at Carl. Up, Archie. That makes Carl your height or taller.
Yeah. Well, maybe Caffrey and Mitch were sitting down, and Carl was,
Caffrey told us the three were standing at the time. Check your notes. I've studied them.
Okay. Maybe that does cut it down some. Yeah, it's still a lot of citizens that start checking for a southern accent.
Don't rely on accent, Archie. Carl has had many years to lose any accent he might have had.
Yeah, that's true.
And so we narrow it, Archie. A man almost surely tall. A man not using the name he was born with. A man with an unexplained gap in his past.
I ought to be able to reach right out and tap him.
You go skeptical again, Archie.
Well, it's still a pretty big haystack.
Let's see if we can't trim it some more. On these building lists I've been going over, I've ruled out for now the members of professions requiring lengthy formal training. Medical men, lawyers, scientists of most kinds.
Yeah, that's chopping it down. I'll admit that.
I'll have further eliminations as we get into it. And I'm putting Saul Panzer on a second list this afternoon. Some of the credit references I'll handle by phone.
So I start trudging, huh?
You start trudging. And remember, Archie, since you'll probably be operating through secretaries, you're looking for a murderer named Carl, not for a new set of telephone numbers to brighten your winter.
Tall? I don't know what you're peddling, Goodwin, but if my boss put his elevator shoes on and stood on a box, he'd still be down somewhere around my necktie. If he stood on his money, though, we'd need a helicopter to get up near his shoelaces.
Oh, Miss Tunis, do you mind if I sit down?
Why, of course not, Mr. Goodwin.
Oh, thanks. You know, I've been in 12 offices on this floor, and you're the first girl who's seen the importance of this survey first crack out of the box.
Well, I'm sort of new here, and I try to pay attention.
Oh, when... you're not just beautiful. You've got a head on you. Is Mr. McLean in?
Well, he's at lunch right now.
Lunch? But... Oh, that reminds me. Know any good restaurants up this way?
Well, I was just going to the downstairs drugstore myself, but I wouldn't say
Well,
that...
come on. Put your bonnet on and let's skip the drugstore. This meal is on the Executive Resources Survey. Yeah, boss, the boil down.
Tinsley, McLean, Fernandes, Tessero, and Kaplan. All five of them tall, all five a little misty in the background. You and Saul have done well, Archie. Very well. But I'm crossing off Fernandes and Kaplan.
Why?
The Credit Bureau report clears Fernandes, and Kaplan was on a special war job. The FBI x-rayed his record twice.
Leaving J.P. Tinsley, Carson McLean, and Philip Tessero, huh?
I'd like to see all three here, Archie. Get them here one way or another. And so you do admit that Tinsley isn't your real name.
Mr. Wolf, are you a blackmailer or what?
I'm a licensed private investigator, sir. Any disclosure you make will be kept in confidence, provided it doesn't touch on the case I'm engaged on.
You haven't said what the case is.
I don't intend to. If you prefer to explain this mysterious gap in your background at the district attorney's office...
Well, I'm using the name Tinsley because I've got an undivorced first wife out on the coast. We broke up 20 years ago, but she said she'd see to it that I never married again. And she knew where I was today. Well, I don't say I'm a saint, but she's a vindictive woman.
I see. May I have names, dates, and places starting 1924?
I can't quite understand your interest, Mr. Wolfe.
It's rather complicated, to put it briefly, Mr. McLean. I'm working in the interest of a client. Our people have found this puzzling gap in your background, and I'd appreciate such clarification as you may be able to supply.
But I told you, Mr. Goodwin, I was raised and educated in the Orient. Until 32, I was in business with my father in China.
Where you say your father died?
Died. With the Depression, I returned to New York, started this importing business in a small way, weathered through the early 30s, and I think my bankers can assure you of my standing today.
They've done so. Carson McLean and Company has an excellent credit rating.
Thank you, Mr. Wolfe.
To switch somewhat abruptly, Mr. McLean, would you happen to remember how you spent the evening of the 19th?
Of this month?
Of this month.
Well, I could hardly... Wait. You say the 19th. Would that have been on a Tuesday?
Yes, it was Tuesday.
Well, that simplifies it. I'm nearly always at the office on Tuesday nights dictating the revisions in our weekly wholesalers' lists. Let me see... Yes, I was there on the 19th. Had a tray sent in. Miss Tunis and I worked till just after midnight.
Miss Helen Tunis, the secretary Mr. Goodwin spoke of.
She's been with me for 2 or 3 months.
Miss Tunis can confirm this dictation on the night of the 19th?
Of course. And Mr. Wolfe, your manner is so persuasive that I'd scarcely realize you're asking some extraordinary searching questions. May I ask why in the world you...
If you'll indulge me, Mr. McLean, my prying is nearly concluded. You say you were in China until 1932. Mr. Tesoro, I'll be brutally frank. We know that your name's not Tesoro. And we know that you served a prison term from 34 to 38 for arson. I'd like some straight answers.
I didn't say I wouldn't answer your questions.
The past can remain your own, provided...
Now, look, Mr. Wolfe. I've been going straight for 12 years. And this business of mine is on the level. Now, if this is a shakedown...
I'm asking where you were on the night of the 19th.
And I'm telling you I stayed in town. I ate alone. And I went to a movie. I caught the 11:35 for Stamford. And that's all there is to it.
You're denying that you were ever in business in the South?
I was born in the South, but I haven't been back there since I was a kid.
What about the arson?
I put in 4 years squaring for that mistake.
Let's start again, Mr. Tesoro. You say you were in Cincinnati in 1931.
Okay, Mr. Wolfe, 3 candidates and we're still on the 1-yard line. Our 1-yard line. Tesoro, McLean, Tinsley. No, rule out McLean. He gave references enough for those years in China. And with Helen Tunis, he's got the one firm alibi we've laid on to. Caffery was killed before midnight.
With conditions as they are in the Far East, Archie, it would be weeks before cables came back on McLean's claims.
Claims? You figure the whole Chinese background's a fake?
I want you to see Miss Tunis again, Archie. Taking all precautions for her safety. And this is one time I give you permission to ply her with all the attentions you can contrive.
Are we far enough to pull tails on any of these three?
I've got Saul Panza on Tesoro. And Saul promised to have men on Tinsley and McLean. Pictures of the three have gone to Kramer for circulation in the South.
Oh. No answer yet from the coast on Tinsley, huh?
Not yet. For the moment, Archie, you'll concentrate on Helen Tunis.
Helen, I've got to see you tonight.
I'd love to, Archie.
Now, look, Helen, I phoned you to come out in the corridor this way because I didn't want McLean to know we're talking.
Do you still say you got that new mink coat on your own money?
Mr. Goodwin, I don't know what right you
Helen,
have
if you
to...
get five guys to buy your stuff, it's your business,
Mr. McLean said his wife might be sending detectives around. Well, you can go right back to your old Mrs. McLean and tell
easy,
her that I...
Easy, Helen, easy.
He was dictating to me.
You know, baby, the harder you lie, the prettier you look. But if this is a fake alibi, and if you keep propping it up, you're going to find yourself in trouble. Bad trouble. Now, how about it? Do I see you at your apartment tonight, or would you rather come down with me to Nero Wolf's right now?
Archie, I... All right, I can't go with you now, and I've got a dinner date with my aunt tonight that I can't break, but I'll try to be back at my apartment by 11.
Archie! Nero Wolf's being...
Archie, Mr. Wolf, I'm at Helen Tunis's apartment.
Well?
I could cut my throat for not making her come with me this afternoon.
Trouble?
Not for her anymore, poor kid. I got here 3 minutes ago and found her strangled. Couldn't have happened more than half an hour ago.
McLean.
McLean. Didn't Saul Panzer say he was getting a tail on him?
He was a new man and he lost him. I should have left you on McLean, Archie.
Yeah, we were both wrong. What do you want me to do?
Phone the police immediately.
This is 32nd Street. I'm only 3 blocks in a job from the office. What if I come back and call from there?
Come back, then. I'll phone Kramer myself.
Mr. Wolf, I'm still kicking myself for that.
Look out, Archie.
Too late, Mr. Wolf. Keep coming right in, Goodwin, with your hands up. No, I wouldn't try that.
McLean.
And keep your hand out of that desk drawer, Wolf.
This time you're too late, McLean. My hand's in the drawer, and I think I'll leave it there.
You don't think I'd shoot?
I'm sure you would. But you've got two of us to cover now. No, Archie, don't try to draw yet.
How'd you get in here, McLean?
He surprised me after making his way in through the areaway below, and of course it had to be Fritz's night out.
I caught your fat friend just 2 seconds before he could get in his call to the police, Goodwin. I overheard his talk with you from the hallway here.
My apologies for not crying out sooner, Archie.
Get your hand out of that drawer. Pull it out without the gun, Wolf, or I'll let you have it now.
I refuse to, McLean. Seems obvious that you mean to kill us in any case.
I'm afraid that's true, Wolf. But when you called me here and Goodwin started making dates with Helen Tunis...
Poor kid, I told her not to talk to you.
He didn't, Goodwin. I've been scared of you and Wolf since I followed Colby here that first night.
Colby?
You knew him as Caffrey. I caught up with him afterward in that subway washroom. No, keep that hand up and watch that gun of yours, Wolf. When I found that envelope on him and read the letter to you contained in it, I knew he hadn't spilled the whole South Carolina story to you.
South Carolina? Would the original knifing have been taking place anywhere near Hampton or Jasper Counties?
Hampton County. But our business is over the line in Georgia. It doesn't matter now.
Pity, Archie. We learned this afternoon that we were growing warm on South Carolina. Mr. McLean, may I ask what you hope to achieve by this insane project of disposing of Mr. Goodwin and myself?
I'm buying time, Wolf. I've 90,000 in small bills in that bag there, plus a plane ticket to Buenos Aires. I've got a silencer on this gun. If you two aren't found till tomorrow morning, I'll be out of the country before they start looking for me.
You don't think the police will put out an alarm for you when they find the body of Helen Tunis?
Goodwin left it to you to report that, remember?
Let's remind ourselves to be prompter on reporting deaths, Archie.
Starting with our own, Mr. Wolf?
Glad you can take it that way, Goodwin.
You actually think you can knock the two of us off?
I'm about to find out, Goodwin.
One moment, McLean. You've never been a real gambler. You know that. With marked cards, of course. But you're not the man to face a sure loss now.
A sure loss?
The loss of your life. Within seconds after you try to pull that trigger.
I told you I had a silencer. You think anyone will hear the shots?
There'll be more shots than you count on. My hand's on a pistol now in this drawer, and Mr. Goodwin has a .38 in his shoulder holster.
You can't shoot through the desk, and Goodwin won't get a chance to draw.
You're an intelligent man, McLean. Vicious, but intelligent. May I describe the certainty of your immediate death if you don't throw that pistol on the desk and give yourself up?
There are two of you, I know that, but...
McLean, you must be aware that in the actual fact, exceedingly few men are killed instantly by a single shot, even from a pistol of heavy caliber. The one you hold is a .32.
And it's a .45 in that drawer, McLean.
I assure you, McLean, that neither of us will surrender the weapons we have should you start shooting. We'll both do our best to draw and keep fighting till you're dead.
You're stalling, Wolf. What have I got to lose by trying for you both now?
Your life? I'll correct that. The loss of some 6 or 8 weeks of your life, possibly months, whatever the time necessary to bring you to trial and to convict you and execute you for the murders you've committed.
Suppose I cancel you out and then take my chances with Goodwin.
A better choice, but still a dubious one. I am fat, exceedingly fat. And for perhaps the first time in my life, I'm thoroughly grateful for that. My bulk affects the calculation, McLean.
McLean, you could pull off all 7 shots and still not hit Mr. Wolf where it counts. If you have to start, you better start on me.
You exaggerate, Archie, and I thank you for the gallantry of it. No, it's quite likely that with 2 or 3 shots, McLean might well dispose of me, but not with your first shot, McLean, and we'll not permit you many more than your first.
Look, if I promise to do no more than tie you two up to give me my head start, will you toss in your guns?
Of course not. Do I speak for us both, Archie?
Check. I say let's start it now.
Wolf, if I give you half of what's in that bag, would you forget these admissions I've made and help on my defense?
I've told you I refuse to bargain. I think that I shall count 5. If your weapon hasn't been tossed on the desk by then, I'll do my best to get my pistol into action. Are you in the court, Archie?
Start counting.
Wait a minute, Mr. Wolf.
1.
If I trade half that bag for no shooting and 1 hour start, no tying up, just your promise that...
2.
All the bag for a half hour start, 90,000.
3. Are you ready, Archie?
All set, sir. Except if you're the one who walks out of this, call up every number in my little red book, huh? And tell each girl I was thinking of her just before you got the 5.
Agreed. I resume 4.
Okay. You win.
Holy sweet Susan, it worked, it worked.
A commendable choice, McLean, for us at least. You see, I'm afraid I forgot to mention one slight factor which might have operated in your favor.
What's that, boss?
I must confess, Archie, that my .45 is in the upstairs den where I took it to oil it last night.
Holy cow, you didn't have a gun?
Why, you dirty...
Take it easy, McLean. I've really got one. Oh, by the way, Mr. Wolf, signals off on those women, huh? When my heart gets back down out of my throat, I'll call them myself.
I'll trouble you for a beer first, Archie. And then if you'll be good enough to phone Inspector Kramer, you can bid him pick up his triple murderer. The one-time cutter of cards. Fortunately for us, who's never been a real gambler.
You have been listening to The New Adventures of Nero Wolfe, starring Sidney Greenstreet. Tonight's transcribed story was based on the characters created by Rex Stout. This is an Edwin Fadiman program produced and directed by J. Donald Wilson. In the cast were Gerald Moore as Archie Goodwin and Lorraine Carter, Bill Johnstone, Howard McNear, Herb Butterfield, and Vic Rodman. Next week at this same time, Nero Wolfe and Archie will bring you The Case of the Phantom Fingers. Don Stanley speaking. 3 chimes mean good times on NBC.
Being a private investigator means 2 things. You can be sure you'll run into trouble, and you can never be sure you can get out of it. Well, there's not much you can do about it, I guess. Except, like Julie always says,
walk softly, Peter Troy.
And now, Peter Troy and the Lady Who Loved Larceny.
That girl Julia met a moment ago. She'll be back in a while, because if she isn't, my office is liable to fold. But right now, I'd like you to meet a blonde. A platinum blonde. A tall, elegantly dressed blonde. Willowy, smooth, and very, very expensive.
£11,000? That's a great deal of money to pay for a bracelet, isn't it?
Matched diamonds and rubies, madam.
Oh, I wasn't complaining. But if my fiancé is to pay that much, then I should be very careful about my selection, shouldn't I?
The gentleman standing over by the door?
Yes.
Perhaps if he were to come over.
Oh, dear me, no. Poor Jonathan knows nothing about jewellery. He's just content to pay the bill. I should like to see a selection of bracelets in this price group.
Oh, certainly, madam. I'll get them from the safe. We have some really exquisite pieces here in our latest collection. Now, if you care to have a look in this tray, I'm sure you'll find something you like.
Oh, I'm sure I will. In fact, I like them all. Be so kind as to place them in this bag.
In the...
And make no sudden movements. This gun is loaded, and I shall have no compunction in using it if I have to. And please don't try to ring the alarm bell. I know exactly where it is situated, and I shall pull the trigger if you make a move towards it.
You can't get away with this, you know.
I can, and I will. The gentleman by the door is watching you very carefully. He's my accomplice, and he also carries a gun. Now, those bracelets in my bag, please. And hurry. Thank you. You've been most cooperative. You may give the alarm once I'm outside the door. Not before, if you value your life. Good afternoon.
Jackson! Quickly! Come in here! We've been robbed!
It was a beautifully executed job. The platinum blonde got clean away together with £35,000 worth of diamond bracelets. However, the police did grab her accomplice, who turned out to be a Mr. Gerard Smythe. But thereby hangs the paradox. For Mr. Smythe maintained that he'd taken no part in the holdup. The police, naturally enough, didn't believe him. So it is we come to the second lady in the case, a tall, elegantly dressed lady. Only this one had hair as dark as midnight on the Nile. Julie ushered her into my office, and she introduced herself as...
Smythe. Geraldine Smythe, Mr. Troy.
Won't you sit down, Miss Smythe?
Thank you.
Cigarette?
Please.
Smythe.
That's right.
Geraldine Smythe? Gerard Smythe.
He's my brother.
Ah.
I gather you read the account of the holdup in the newspapers.
Yes, I did. As a matter of fact, it's right here in front of me.
And what could you make of it, Mr. Troy?
Well, it seems your brother didn't move fast enough.
Do you really believe he was her accomplice?
Miss Smythe wasn't there. I just know what I read in the papers, that's all. But here they seem to go along with the idea that the two of them were in the thing together.
I have here £100 in cash. I should like to retain your services to prove that Gerard had nothing whatsoever to do with that holdup.
I see. One question, Miss Smythe.
Yes?
Did he?
Did he what?
Oh, come on now.
Mr. Troy...
You're offering me that money for one of two reasons. Either you know he was part of the setup and you want me to somehow break the police case against him.
Or?
Or else you're on the level. You honestly don't think he had anything to do with the stick-up. Well, I'd just like to know which it is, that's all.
I see.
Now, before we go any further, you'd better know that I wasn't born yesterday. £100 or 100 times that amount doesn't make me want to go along with any snide deal.
Mr. Troy, if you have any idea...
I value my license, Miss Smythe. There are some people around this city who'd like to revoke it. Unorthodox we may be, but crooked we are not. How do I make myself clear? If your brother was involved in that robbery, then he's going to have to take the rap. Well, I've said my piece. Now you say yours.
My brother has a police record, Mr. Troy.
Well, it's been nice talking to you, Miss Smythe.
At present, he's bankrupt. In the past, he's foolishly written out checks when there have been no funds to meet them. He's silly, stupid, thoughtless, but he is not a criminal.
Hmm. Well, what's the story, then?
A woman rang him up yesterday morning. She was able to copy my voice exactly. She made an appointment to meet Gerard at Matelier's at 2:30 that same afternoon.
And at 2:35, Matelier's was robbed of £35,000 worth of diamond bracelets.
And Gerard was there. You see, he thought he was meeting me. Well, the police don't believe the story. No one does. I doubt whether you'll prove an exception. But I thought...
Sit down again, Miss Smythe.
You mean...
We've got a lot of things to discuss.
You're going to take the case?
And not just for the money, either. Now, my creditors would kill me for saying that.
Then...
Now, I'll soon know if you're handing me a phony line.
If you are, you're going to be very sorry, Geraldine.
I assure you, Mr. Troy.
Peter, it saves time. Well, now let's have Julie in and get some of this down in writing.
That man with the red head at the corner table?
Yes, Peter Troy, Canadian. Harry says he's a private eye. Dangerous and snoopy. He's been asking questions.
About what?
About Gerard Smythe. He said someone told him that Smythe used to come here a lot.
Go on.
He seems to be checking up. He wants to know the name of any blonde woman who comes here. Rachel, he's bad medicine. He's got a tough reputation.
He's not the only one, is he? Someone told him that Smythe used to come here a lot. Geraldine, Smythe's sister. Yes, that's logical. She's probably called in a private detective to try and clear her brother.
And Troy is just the one to do it. Rachel, I don't...
I'll fix it.
You can't fix a man like that.
Can't I? Don't underestimate me, Fedor. People are always doing that. And they live to regret it. Troy is going to do the same. You know, there are times, Peter, when being your private secretary and general factotum has its advantages. I bet not many working girls get taken to places like the club, Rachel.
Yeah, well, that's fine, Julie, but may I remind you we're here on business? Geraldine said...
Geraldine.
Miss Smythe said that her brother used to haunt this place. Okay, so the girl who rang him up posing as a sister knew him and her. It has to be only a passing acquaintance, otherwise Gerard would have recognized the girl in that jewelry store, recognized her immediately.
So you think perhaps it's someone who's met him quite casually?
Yeah, probably in some place like this. I don't see any platinum blondes here, though.
Oh, Pete.
Hmm?
I'm going to tell you some of the facts of life.
Such as?
A lady's crowning glory can take on as many hues and colors as the rainbow.
So?
Bleach and hair dye. She may have been a platinum blonde when she held up that jewelry shop, but she could be brunette, redhead, raven, or bald by now.
Raven?
Raven. Like Geraldine Smythe. I'd just like to know what color her hair is at the roots.
You, my sweet, have a nasty, suspicious mind.
It comes from working for a nasty, suspicious boss. Only where the ladies are concerned, he's sometimes just a babe in arms.
Excuse me, Mr. Troy.
Yeah?
You're wanted on the telephone, sir, a Miss Geraldine Smythe.
No, oh, where's the phone?
You can take it over at the reception desk, sir.
Thank you. Excuse me, Julie. Back in 2 ticks. Hello, this is Peter Troy.
Oh, hello, Mr. Troy. This is Geraldine. Oh, I'm so glad I caught you. I thought you'd be at the club, Rachel. Look, I've just found out something of vital importance.
Oh, yeah?
I can't tell you about it over the phone, and I can't come to the club. Can you meet me right away?
Well,
there's a little park just 2 blocks down from the club, on the opposite side of the road. I'll be sitting on the bench by the fountain. Hurry, please.
Now, wait a minute. Hey, waiter.
Yes, sir.
Look, would you tell the lady at my table I've been called away urgently? I won't be long. And see that she has anything she wants for
me? Very good, sir. But you will miss the floor show. It's just about to start. And Madame Rachel, the owner of the club, has a fabulous act.
Yeah, well, I'll catch it next time.
Very good, sir. Give the lady your message, Mr. Troy.
Geraldine.
She sends her apologies, Mr. Troy. Don't turn around. And this thing will go off. You really fell for her line, didn't you, Mr. Troy?
Yes, I really did.
Together with her apologies, Geraldine sends you a little present, Mr. Troy.
Is it loaded?
Look at the fountain. Keep your eyes on it, Troy. Look at the cool, dark water. Not very deep, is it? But a man could drown there.
I believe you.
Oh, but don't take my word for it. Let me prove it to you. Yes, a man could quite easily drown in there.
Well, it didn't look so good for Geraldine Smythe. Right then, it didn't look so hot for me either. In a million years, I wouldn't have guessed there was a trap waiting for me in that little park. The guy, whoever he was, had slugged me with the butt of his gun. Oh, I guess I'd have passed out, but he gave me a push into a fountain. Cold water brought me back to earth with a bang. I lay possum in the water for a second or two, waiting for him to make his next move. Then things got a little confused, because I distinctly heard his footsteps running off. I still made no move. I just lay face down, holding my breath, listening. And sure enough, moments later, I heard some footsteps coming back. Then a hand grabbed the back of my coat collar. I swung around, ready to land him.
Take it easy, Troy.
Caswell!
Come on now, let me give you a hand out of there. Come on. I'd say you are in the mess. Come on, up you go.
Caswell, Inspector Caswell. Now, what in the blue blazes are you doing here?
Yes, well, I suppose I could ask you the same question. You know, there must be some bylaw about swimming in city fountains.
Well, thanks for the help. But how did you get on the scene?
Quite simple. You see, we've had Geraldine Smythe under surveillance since we arrested her brother. She came to your office, so we put a shadow on you, too.
Oh, thank you. You're as bad as Mellonby.
Yeah, we saw you go to the Club Rachel. An hour later, our man saw you leave the place in the very devil of a hurry. He radioed me because he thought you were onto something, so I took a police car and came straight out here. Well, lucky I did, it seems.
Tell me, did you see anyone running away from here?
No, not actually. I heard someone, but too dark to catch up with him now. Who was he?
I haven't the faintest idea.
So, you know, you really do get yourself into some scrapes, don't you? Bless you. You better get into some dry clothes. You'll catch your death of cold.
Inspector, I nearly caught my death of drowning. And on 2 feet of water, that's humiliating.
Yes. Well, come along. Over to the car. Won't tell me anything about it?
You know about as much as I do. Geraldine Smythe offered me a nice fat fee if I could find some evidence that'd clear a brother.
A bit of an optimist, aren't you? Got a cast iron case against Smythe.
All right. Maybe his cute little sister is the stick-up artist after all. The guy that slugged me said that was her idea. And she phoned me at the Club Rachel to meet her here. Yeah. All seems to add up. Yet...
Wait a minute. She phoned you at the Club Rachel.
Yes, 10 minutes ago.
Well, don't be silly. That's impossible.
Now, look, Maury, I tell you...
I tell you that Geraldine Smythe has been sitting in a cinema in Leicester Square for the past 2 hours, and there's a Scotland Yard man sitting right behind her. I had a report from him during the interval. She hasn't been out of his sight. So she couldn't have phoned you.
Now, look, I know what I... Hey, now, wait a minute. Maybe that figures.
How do you mean?
The salesman at the jewelry store said the woman spoke with an exaggerated accent, right?
Yeah.
Before that, Gerard Smythe received a phone call from someone whose voice was exactly like his sister's.
Yeah.
Then I got a phone call, and I'd swear it was Geraldine Smythe. Yeah. Maury, we're looking for someone who's very clever at disguising their voice.
A mimic.
And a mighty good one, too. And another thing. That guy at the fountain didn't intend to kill me at all. He could have used that gun and still escaped.
Oh, here we are. Copy it. Driver, take us to Mr. Troy's flat in Chelsea, will you? It's just down the way from his office.
Very good, sir.
All right. So he didn't intend to kill you?
No, he just wanted me to think Geraldine had sent him. An attempt to frame her. They want me to think that she and her brother worked together on the holdup.
Thereby diverting attention from someone else.
Yeah.
Troy, are you asking me to believe that this was a solo job?
Well, it looks like it to me.
I wonder.
Look, I got that phone call at the Club Rachel, right? Now, only my secretary and Geraldine Smythe knew I was going there.
Yeah.
So the call had to come from a tip-off from the club. Now, the answer just has to be there somewhere. Thank you.
went home just to change your suit? Well, of all the corny excuses.
Yes, well, he really did have to change his suit, Miss Summers. I'll vouch for that.
You backing him up, Inspector? Now, that's what I call an unholy alliance. Anyway, you missed a darn good floor show, Peter, and I had crepe Suzette smothered in brandy and another bottle of Clicquot.
Well, bang goes our commission on this job. Anyway, let's have a look at the menu. I'm starving. The dinner's on me, Maury, and...
Oh, thank you.
Well, I'll be...
What's the matter? Price is too steep?
The program of the floor show is listed on the other side of the menu.
Yeah, well, what about it?
A star attraction. Here, read it.
By popular demand, Madam Rachel, your hostess, returns to the footlights to give you her impressions of famous voices from the stage and screen.
Yeah, impressions of famous voices. Get it? She's an impersonator, a mimic.
Just a minute, are you trying to say that the owner of this club is a stick-up artist?
Well, you missed the act. It was fabulous. Stick-up artist? You mean...
Julie, can you see her? Is she anywhere around the place?
Yes, over by the reception desk, the tall redhead.
Redhead? We're looking for a platinum blonde.
Now, Julie, explain the facts of life to the inspector, will you?
Just a minute, where are you going?
Somewhere backstage, you must have a dressing room. If I find a bottle of peroxide and a bottle of hair dye in that dressing room, then I think we're onto something, Inspector.
Now, listen, Troy.
Now, wait a minute. There's nothing to stop me having a look back there, is there? I don't need search warrants for that. Back soon.
Oh, dear. There's going to be trouble. I just know it.
No wonder Mellonby was so keen to get away on his vacation. Troy and trouble are practically synonymous.
There's going to be something here somewhere. Dash it all. That's not the sort of thing you can hide away.
Looking for something, Troy?
Well, now, that's a familiar voice.
You're one of these fellows who just can't take a hint, aren't you?
So I've been told.
Yes. You find anything of interest, Troy?
Well, I didn't find what I was looking for.
Like what?
There was something else.
Hmm? What?
This platinum blonde wig. You know, I'll bet it fits snugly over Rachel's red hair, huh?
You've just talked yourself into a grave, Troy.
Harry, I... What's he doing here?
Snooping. He's found the blonde wig.
I see.
So do I, now.
It's not going to do you any good, Mr. Troy.
The car's outside.
Take him somewhere quiet. A drive in the night air will do you both good.
All right, move, Troy. And no funny business. With all that racket going on in the club, no one would hear a shot. We're making for the back door. It's opposite in the corridor.
Late show starting. 3 minutes the curtain. Late show.
You know, it's too bad I didn't get to see your act, Rachel.
You got a free sample of it over the house phone, Mr. Troy. You'll excuse me, I know. I have to get ready for the late show. I'll leave you in Harry's very capable hands.
Now, Troy, as we walk out into the corridor, keep your eyes straight in front of you. And remember, I'm right behind you. And I don't much care where I let you have it.
Come on, you girls. To Mr. Curtin. Places now.
Oh,
come on, to Mr. Curtin. Places.
Keep moving, Troy.
Hi, Harry. Is your friend?
He's nice. Ask him if he wants to do anything after the show.
Get out of the way, you girls.
Ladies, I love you. Let the gun go off now, Harry, and you'll really start to riot.
No, look, I'm warning you. That's for the ducking, Harry.
Just a little difference of opinion, ladies, that's all.
On your feet, Harry.
You just remember I can squeeze the trigger on this gun of mine quicker than you can reach for yours.
Troy, I'll
get
back
inside the dressing room. Make way, girls.
Go on, inside, Harry.
Harry, what the...
Now, here's your playmate, Rachel. Keep each other company whilst I send one of the ladies of the chorus for a pal of mine. Inspector Caswell of Scotland Yard. He's sitting at my table.
Oh, Harry, you bungler!
Oh. Which one of you girls would like to earn a bottle of champagne?
Harry!
don't understand how she was...
Harry was outside in the car. Rachel staged the stick-up, used Gerard Smythe as a diversion. It worked perfectly.
They concentrated on holding Gerard whilst Rachel made her getaway.
Exactly. Now, would you please concentrate on the music and the dancing?
Mm-hmm. Pete?
Yes, honey bun?
That bottle of champagne for the chorus girl.
Hmm?
Now, just for record, how do I list that as working expenses?
You're the secretary, honey. It's your problem.
Yes, well, I... Oh!
What's the matter?
My feet. You're treading on them.
Sorry.
Just walk softly, Peter Troy.
Blonde wig, carefully applied makeup, a thin veil covering half the face, a very professional, exaggerated accent, and the Titian-haired Rachel became a soft, willowy, flaxen beauty. But just about as lethal as a truckload of TNT. Oh, she needed the money from her jewelry haul to pay a stiff mortgage on her club. The place was in hock deeper than the bass fiddle's G-note. And that's why the gal with a thousand voices had to go back in front of the footlights. She'd found out about Gerard Smythe having a police record, and she watched his sister carefully. Watched and listened to Geraldine talking. The rest you know about. Oh, she and Harry got 10 years apiece, and the lady doesn't love larceny anymore.
Is the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
This week's Case Closed. If you want to find more from Nero Wolfe, Peter Troy, past episodes of this show, everything else Relic Radio, just visit the website at relicradio.com. Thousands of old-time radio episodes there for you to listen to, a shoutcast stream, and everything else we might have going on. You can also donate through the website. It's how this is all made possible. 100% funded by you. Visit donate.relicradio.com or click on the link on the website. Your support keeps this show coming every week. Thanks to those who have helped out. Thanks for joining me today. Be back next Wednesday with another hour of Case Closed.